Hello and welcome to Natasha Explains It All. Today's episode is going to be about at least one of the cases that were part of the Supreme Court's latest term, which ended last week. The Supreme Court of the United States hears cases each year, normally hears the cases starting in about October through the next several months, and then issues its rulings, its opinions, they're called opinions, really any time after that. But oftentimes what happens is the higher profile cases, the cases that people are paying more attention to, the justices will sometimes hold on to those and issue their rulings at the very end of the Supreme Court term in June. And that's what happened last week. And I'd like to, for this episode, focus on one of those cases and talk about how absurd it is and what are potential consequences from it. So this case is the 303 Creative LLC versus Alenis case, which again was decided last week. And the punchline of this case is that the Supreme Court decided that private businesses have the right to refuse service to gay customers. and they can do this on a free speech basis, part of a First Amendment claim regarding religious freedom. Because the facts in this case are that this woman who, claims that she is a, you know, evangelical Christian. She has a website. She makes websites, and she doesn't want to have to make wedding websites for gay couples. And she wants the Supreme Court to say that she has the right to say no to gay couples who ask for her business. Now, there's a lot of implications about this. And one of the ones that I want to focus on for this episode, which is in reference to the title of this episode, SCOTUS Has No Standing, this is going to sound kind of lawyerly and like, you know, does this matter kind of thing, but it really does. And this issue of standing is what I want to talk about. So what am I talking about? Whenever you file a lawsuit, you have to establish that you have met standing. And standing is this legal term that basically helps the courts filter out cases and decide which cases it's going to hear and which cases it's going to throw out. Every plaintiff who files a lawsuit has to establish standing. And there's three basic components of that. One, you have to establish that you've been injured in some way, right? There's some harm that you're complaining about. Two, you have to be able to trace that harm to the defendant, to the person or business or government you're suing, right? You were harmed and the person you're suing caused that harm. And then third, that the courts can actually do something about it. It's called redressability. So you were harmed, the person you're suing caused the harm, and then the court is able to redress your harm. It's within the kind of things that the court can do to, you know, fix the injury. So I want to focus on that first component, which is the injury component. And definitely within lawyer circles right now, there is a lot of anger and disbelief about the fact that this case, this 303 Creative case, was even heard by the Supreme Court, much less that they decided in favor of this person, and in favor of this business more explicitly, and I'll get into that in a second. But like, this is an example of how this case is an example of how the conservative supermajority on the Supreme Court has just completely disregarded legal principles when they get in the way of the result that they want. And so in this case, this person, the owner of 303 Creative, Lori Smith, was not injured. Okay. She did not establish standing. And what do I mean by that? First of all, this woman does not make wedding websites. She claimed that her injury was that in some hypothetical future, if she hypothetically would like to one day make wedding websites, then she doesn't want to be required to make websites for gay couples because she doesn't believe in gay marriage because of her Christian faith. So she actually hasn't been, she doesn't even make wedding websites, okay? So this is like the first level. She doesn't make wedding websites. And you can look up her business. She mostly makes websites all related to Christianity, related to like schools and faith-based groups and things like that. She does not make wedding websites. That's the first thing. She's not injured because she doesn't make wedding websites. Then, even more egregiously, she claims that there was a gay couple that asked her to make a wedding website. And that's what created the injury that she is now asking the Supreme Court to redress, right? That was that third prong redressability, a third prong of standing, right? Injury, traceability, and redressability. The thing, though, is that she lied about this and her lawyers lied about this. Not only, again, she doesn't make wedding websites. It's not something that she does. She's talking about a hypothetical future, which does not create an injury. That's not concrete. One of the elements of injuries has to be something concrete, not hypothetical, like hers. And on top of that, she made up. They literally made up this supposed couple, gay couple, that asked her to make a website. They're just lies. And you can read news reports about this. Like this has come out. The couple that the lawyers put in the briefs, you know, saying that this couple contacted her to make a wedding website for their gay wedding, doesn't exist. Like the couple does not exist. One of the guys, some guy named Mike, reporters found him, and like this guy is heterosexual and has been married for many years. He had no idea what the case was about. He is not in a gay relationship. He's not seeking to get married. Like he's married to a woman, has been married for years. So this is completely lies, complete lies, complete lies. And honestly, the lawyers who filed this lawsuit, who knew this, should be disbarred. Like you're not allowed to lie. You're not allowed to lie to the court. Like you can't knowingly say things in your filings that you know to be untrue. And anyway, just a little bit of digging would have showed that these were lies. And so it's just really outrageous that this case that is going to have such just enormous consequences for the safety and well-being of so many people in the United States, as well as the signal it sends for the rest of the world, are all based on lies, are based on someone who was not actually injured and who lied to claim that she was injured, and that the Supreme Court took that at face value because they wanted to rule in her favor. And this case is a more recent version of a case that was heard back in 2017 called Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And in that case, which was, there was a very different composition of the court at that time. This was when Justice Kennedy was still on the Supreme Court. Justice Gorsuch, who was the first Supreme Court justice that Trump put on the court, was already on the court, but Kavanaugh was not on the court yet. Neither was Amy Coney Barrett, creating that 6-3 supermajority. So this was a while ago. In 2017, there was a case called Masterpiece Cake Shop. Similar situation where we had, in that case, you had this baker who like made cakes, including wedding cakes. So already like a little more like actually factually accurate. And he had been requested to make a wedding cake for a gay couple for their wedding, and he refused. And the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had ruled against him, you know, saying that this was a violation of Colorado's anti-discrimination laws. And he appealed his case to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court kind of like punted the case. They didn't say that the Baker, they didn't rule for the Baker, but they didn't, they also didn't rule against them. They basically said like, I know this is going to sound silly, but it's true. Like, they basically said, well, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission in like denying his claim were too mean to him. Like, they didn't take into account enough like his strongly held religious beliefs. And so like, basically we're going to, you know, remand this case. And so like, they voted for the Baker, but they didn't say that like he now has the right to discriminate against people he doesn't, you know, want to offer business to. And so it kind of left things messy. And now with this 303 Creative case, the Supreme Court, now with a 6-3 conservative majority, has cleaned that case up, so to speak, on lies. And they have decided that per the free speech clause of the First Amendment, that a private business cannot be compelled to, an artist, excuse me, can they be compelled to, they cannot be compelled to provide speech, quote unquote speech, that is in, you know, violation of their beliefs. And in this case, the speech was creating a website, and this woman believed that that was creating a wedding website, which she doesn't create, for a gay couple, which doesn't exist, would violate her strongly held beliefs in, you know, very fundamentalist Christianity. Okay. So setting aside, so we've got this standing issue. The Supreme Court has issued a momentous opinion based on lies. And one more thing before I get into the impact of this. Someone might think, well, that sounds really bad. And they like interpreted the facts as they wanted and made up facts, because this is the outcome that they wanted, but maybe this is an outlier. Unfortunately, it's not. When it is promoting the agenda of white Christians, the Supreme Court, with its 6-3 conservative supermajority, is totally fine with butchering the record and lying about what's happened in order to produce an outcome that supports their ideology. And what I mean by that is that there was another case from the 2022 term called Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, which follows the same kind of pattern of the Supreme Court lying in order to protect the rights, or what they considered the right, or to expand, I should say it differently. They lied in order to expand the rights of Christian evangelicals to the detriment of those who do not hold those beliefs. And in the Kennedy versus Bremerton School District case, that was a case about a high school public school football coach who was praying during football games. And the Supreme Court and the coach had been told by his school to stop because the school was afraid of getting sued, because that's like a clear violation of the First Amendment free exercise clause, like you can't impose your religion on other people, particularly in a public school setting. But the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the coach. And they said, no, like the coach was just having private prayer and participation in that by students was completely voluntary. No one was being forced to. This wasn't public prayer. And he has a right to do that. Except for the fact that that's like not the facts at all. And it's not like these facts weren't known to the justices, because in her dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor included photographs from the public high school and these public prayer sessions, basically putting the majority on blast for their just outright lies. This wasn't about a coach hosting private, voluntary, small prayer. This was about a coach in the middle of the field during games requiring all players from his team, as well as from the opposing team, to all kneel in the middle of the field while they're like holding up their helmets, and he's leading everybody in prayer. Like, you can't do that. You can't do that in a public school in the United States. That is a violation of the free exercise clause of the First Amendment. You are not allowed to impose your religion on other people. You cannot have a public school official telling all students that they are obligated to participate in prayer. And the justices, the conservative justices, you know, were basically like, well, that's just not what happened. And, you know, they're like, this is just, you know, it's just private prayer. It's just private prayer. And he's allowed to do that. And the school telling him he can't is a violation of his First Amendment rights, which is just wild. It completely like decimates the separation of church and state. And this was in the public school setting. And so that is quite problematic. And so just going back to the 303 creative case, all I was trying to say with going back to this Kennedy versus Bremerton school district case is that we have a pattern of this conservative supermajority lying about the facts in order to vote for outcomes that they support, specifically when what is at issue are the scope of the rights afforded to evangelical Christians, very, very conservative, right-wing Christian leanings. And so I want to turn now to like the implications of this case, but that in itself is already like a huge implication. Like, this court is willing to like not follow the law, ignore facts, accept lies, perpetuate lies in order to issue results that drastically reinterpret First Amendment law to allow Christians, white evangelical Christians, to impose their religious beliefs on other people and deny now business services to people that they don't agree with. Now, what's going to happen now with 303 Creative? Basically, as I said, this has opened the floodgates for businesses to basically put up no gays allowed signs. And I was talking to some family members who were like, well, you know, in this age of like, you know, businesses getting canceled when they take stances that people don't like, you know, is this really going to have that big of an impact? Because, you know, like the businesses that decide to follow this and like discriminate against LGBTQ people are probably going to lose a lot of business. So like, won't the market basically have some type of correcting force on this. And so the actual impact of this won't be that big. And I would say that no, like the impact is actually going to be enormous. And I want to get into that in just a second. But I did, just out of curiosity, like Google the business 303 Creative kind of to this point. And, you know, one thing that is certainly supports what this relative of mine was saying was, I was just looking at like the Yelp reviews for this business. And this decision came down on Friday. So it's only been a matter of days since this decision came out. And there are now 51 reviews on Yelp for this business, and they're all one-star reviews. And they're all reviews of people being like, you are homophobic, and it's really sad that you're using religious freedom as a fake shield to allow you to harm people and promote, you know, your homophobic views or whatever. So, and it reminds me of recently, I'm not going to remember what city this was in. It was in Texas. And there was some type of like farmers market, crafts fair kind of thing that had accepted a vendor who makes candles and candle holders and things, and then had withdrawn their, not the license, but had said that this vendor could no longer participate in this market because they learned that the vendor was gay. I think it was in the Dallas area. But don't quote me on that. There are a lot of news stories on this. So we can fact check this. But anyway, what ended up happening is, so this vendor was excluded from this market because the organizers of this market said that they were Christians, and as part of their faith, they don't believe in gay people. And so you can't be part of our market anymore. And the backlash was very swift. They got a lot of negative press. And they got a lot of negative reviews. And the artist who they had excluded, you know, got a lot of attention on her business. And so, to my relative's point, I think to a certain extent, there's going to be that, I think corrective force is too strong of a term, but like people, the conservative majority on the Supreme Court and the minority that they whose views they really push are a minority in the United States. Like the far right Christian evangelical, you know, anti-choice, anti-gay, anti-trans sector is a minority that is really out of line with where the majority of Americans stand. And so I think to some level, it's, you know, like if businesses take a really hard stance on this, they're going to lose business. But that's not going to be enough to mitigate the disaster that's going to come from this opinion. And what I mean by that is like the law works really slowly. So what's going to happen is that businesses are going to test the boundaries of this law for years to come. And if and when someone then sues a business, you know, because they were denied service on the basis of their status as a gay person, the harm's already going to be done. And if and when it ever gets to the Supreme Court again, like there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court is going to narrow the impact of this decision. So here's the thing. And like who, think about the law as well is like, so they've issued this ruling that this woman who designs websites can now refuse customers on the basis of their queer status because she just doesn't believe in them. Okay. In the dissent that Justice Sotomayor wrote that Justices Kagan and Ketanji Jackson joined, you know, they said, like, it, quote, grants a business open to the public a constitutional right to refuse to serve members of a protected class, close quote. And that is going to open the door for a million and one cases and a million and one scenarios of what does that cover. So we now have a website designer who's like, okay, I am good. I have a First Amendment right to deny service to gay people. And so who's next, right? Like, does that mean that, like, wedding photographers, you know, wedding planners, like people who do flowers, like florists, like who is going to be encompassed under this lens of, quote, an artist who has a First Amendment right to deny service on the basis that of it would promote a message that they don't agree with? How many different what kind of businesses, what kind of artists are going to be encompassed by that? And it's not going to stop with folks who are gay, right? I want to quote that again from the dissent. Quote, this decision, quote, grants a business open to the public a constitutional right to refuse to serve members of a protected class, close quote. Like, what's going to happen when a business now refuses, like some business refuses now to do wedding invitations for an interracial marriage because they don't like, because they're going to use the 303 creative case to argue that they can refuse service to this couple because their religious belief is that like interracial marriage is wrong. And you might respond to that and say, Natasha, that's like crazy. That's not how this is going to go. Why not? Like, this has opened the floodgates for any business, for anyone who holds these kind of views to test the waters. And even if that happened, okay, and sorry, if that happens, because I think it's very likely to happen, and if the couple that is turned away then decides to file a lawsuit, like, it's still going to be years before that's resolved, and the harm is done in the meantime. We are creating, the Supreme Court has created an environment that is hostile to LGBTQ people and anyone else that Christian evangelicals don't like for whatever reason. And now they can use this case and say, well, I have a First Amendment right to refuse you service. This is incredibly dangerous. And, you know, there's questions about, like, well, what if other religions started to use this, right? Like, what if a Muslim business decided to use this to refuse gay customers, or, you know, whatever, some other religion decided to use this to bar gay customers or black customers or some other group that they say is not, you know, in line with their religious beliefs. Again, the harm is already going to be done. We'd have to actually see then in the years to come how the courts actually handle that. I think that the Supreme Court, if and when they eventually hear these other iterations of these cases, are likely to uphold anything that will preserve the rights that they interpret Christian evangelicals have, and then distinguish when it's not. And what I mean by that, we can see kind of that happening. Like, let's look at a couple of examples of what I mean by that. So in the abortion context, for example, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year in a decision called Dobbs and said that there was no constitutional right to abortion, a lot of states then passed abortion bans, outlawing abortion entirely or effectively putting in bans by banning it after 6 weeks or other very short periods of time where, like, most people don't even know they're pregnant yet. And this is based on a very Christian, evangelical, right-wing perspective on, like, when life begins and that type of religious outlook on things. And there have starting to be lawsuits from people of other religions, from Jewish backgrounds, Muslim backgrounds, who are filing lawsuits saying that, like, actually this violates our religious freedom rights because our faiths, you know, don't interpret the start of life in this way. Our religions protect the right to abortion up to a certain time or whatever. And so they're saying that because a lot of these abortion cases have been upheld based on this, like, again, religious freedom idea that, like, providers, you know, can refuse to provide abortion services if it goes against their faith. And a lot of these abortion bans have been passed by state legislators who are evangelical Christians promoting their religious views and imposing those on the public, which is not what the First Amendment is. Literally the no establishment, the establishment clause of the First Amendment says that the government shall make no establishment regarding religion. And so now you have these other religions, non-Christian religions, pushing back and saying, well, you know, we don't want, this doesn't align with our religious belief. So where's our religious freedom? Like, we should be able to access these abortion services because these are in line with our religious beliefs. And we still have to see how the courts are going to treat those. But I have a feeling that if the Supreme Court were to get those cases, they would distinguish and say that those other religions, like, don't have a right. And I know that sounds very cynical and that sounds like very double standard, like, but that's what this supermajority, conservative supermajority in the Supreme Court has been promoting. Like, they're not here for legal consistency. They're here to promote their specific agenda of a white nationalist theocracy based on Christian, their view of Christian principles. And another example, remember earlier in this episode, I talked about Kennedy versus Bremerton School, about the public school high school football coach who was forcing his players to engage in Christian prayer in the middle of the football field. I mean, what about if a Muslim coach or a Jewish coach or a Jewish teacher or a Muslim teacher, right? Or a Hindu teacher or something, right? Like, required all of their students to participate in a prayer of their own faith. Like, come on. Like, do you really think that the Supreme Court would say that that's okay? No, they wouldn't. Like, they would say that that's a violation of the First Amendment Establishment Clause. And, like, that for those faiths, that they would not have the religious freedom to be able to coerce public school students to participate in their religious practices, particularly because there's probably students who don't adhere to those beliefs. And again, like, yeah, that sounds like that would be inconsistent logic. That would be really hypocritical, the Supreme Court to decide in different ways. But that's the setup of what's going on. Like, they're not interested in legal consistency. They're interested in promoting a very specific agenda that is white Christian nationalist theocracy. So we're going to have to see over the next several years how this plays out in terms of how people are harmed and just how far and how much damage this case is going to get. And I also just want to point out the reality that, again, like, how many people are going to be harmed without any correction? Like, someone who is gay or an interracial couple or whatever other category of person that, you know, might be discriminated against by a business. And if they're discriminated against by a business, like, not every person is going to then go file a lawsuit to challenge that. They're going to suffer the indignity and then try to move on with their lives, because it takes so much effort, so much money, so much wherewithal to then bring a federal lawsuit to challenge this. Like, most people are not going to bother, and yet they're still going to feel less safe. in moving throughout the world because they know now that businesses have the right to refuse to serve them based on their religious beliefs that like gay people are sinful or whatever. And you know, this just has just like such deep echoes of the recent past in the United States. Like, this is what the whole purpose of segregation was. Businesses and places of public accommodation could refuse service to Black Americans just on the basis of their race, because just I don't like you and I don't have to, and the law says it's okay. And now the Supreme Court has says it's okay to have that same logic as it applies to gay people, which will probably also include trans people and will be used by businesses to discriminate probably much broader than that as well against whoever they don't like. And I don't know how long it will be and who will actually suffer consequences for that discrimination. Like, the people who are discriminating, the people who are being discriminated against are going to be harmed, and they're going to be harmed right away. I think that it requires us to do some serious reflection about, I mean, for some people, they've experienced this a lot, but for others who haven't, like, imagine that now a business, whatever it is, could now say, I'm going to refuse to serve you. Not because you've been, you know, you're like, you know, in a bar and you get like super rowdy and they're allowed to throw you out, you know, because you're too drunk and you're, you know, causing havoc. No, but simply because of who you are. I just don't like you because of who you are, because of an inherent characteristic of yours, because of an immutable characteristic. You know, to what, where is this going to lead? And again, going back to the beginning, like, based on, this case is based on lies. Like, I'm a civil rights lawyer, and lawyers in my space, lawyers in like consumer protection and other fields, employment law, have to work so hard to establish standing, you know, to prove to courts that we, that our case should be heard in court, that there has been injury and it's concrete. And now, like, with this case, it's like, okay, I guess that as long as you're promoting a cause that the conservative supermajority supports, like, you don't actually have to have standing. You can lie to the court about what happened and not actually be injured in any way. And it's okay, because they still want to be able to promote the result that they want. And they have the power to, because they're not being checked by Congress, which would be the one body that could limit their power most directly by expanding the court. Because that is like basically the one method that is constitutional, because there are no requirements in the Constitution as to the number of judges on the Supreme Court. And this method has been tested several times. Kind of probably the most famous one was with the New Deal FDR. Roosevelt, the Supreme Court had been striking down various parts of the New Deal. And so FDR threatened to expand the court and threatened seriously. And then, you know, miraculously, the Supreme Court at that time then started changing, reversing its opinions and upholding a lot of the New Deal programs. And so FDR didn't go through with his threat to expand the court. So anyway, there's precedent for that because the conservative supermajority on the Supreme Court right now does not represent where most Americans stand on these kind of issues. And the 303 creative case really opens the floodgates for a lot, and I mean a lot of harm to come. I'm going to leave it there. There's so much more to say. But the last thing I'll say is I want to alert listeners to a website called Oye, oye.org. Oye is spelled OYEZ.org, oye.org. I'll put it in the show notes. And oye.org is a website that tracks all of the Supreme Court cases. So if you're interested, I mean, you can always Google Supreme Court cases, but the OIE website is really helpful because you can listen to the oral arguments. They have all the recordings of the oral arguments there, as well as copies of all of the actual opinions. Because, you know, a lot of the news stories you read don't actually include the actual opinions themselves, if you'd like to read them, as well as like the vote breakdown and stuff. And OIE comes from, at the beginning of every Supreme Court oral argument, I'm blanking on what the exact word, like convocation. There's like this little speech, not speech is way too strong a word. This phrase that is said, like oye, oye, and I don't remember the rest of the whole phrase, but it's meant to mark the beginning of the session, and then oral argument follows from there, and it's a Supreme Court tradition, and so the name OIE comes from that call, let's call it a call, to begin each Supreme Court session. And one interesting thing that I noticed is that OIE used to have, for each case breakdown, the photos of each of the justices and the exact vote, you know, how many people were in the majority and who was in the majority versus who was in the minority. And like you can actually see the faces of the justices with their names in that breakdown. It's very interesting that it looks like starting in like the 2021 or 2022 session, they stopped doing that. And I don't know why. But it's interesting because the more recent years, it's definitely not as transparent. So like OIE is not as useful as it used to be. And you can compare this, like the cases I referenced today, like the Masterpiece Cake Shop case from 2017, you can see the breakdown of the vote. And there's the pictures of the justices and you can see who voted which way. But if you go to the Kennedy versus Bremerton School District case that I mentioned from 2022, it already doesn't have that. So I don't know. I don't know the reason for that. And that's not good because that makes it less transparent to the public and digestible about what exactly is happening. But you can still hear the oral arguments. And that's really, that's very important. And I do see that looks like OIE still needs to update some of the cases from last week to include the final rulings. But anyway, so that's enough for today. 303 creative case decided by the Supreme Court last week. And it's a bad case. It's a really bad case, not just from like a legal jurisprudence, let's follow the law kind of perspective, but also in concrete ways that it's going to harm people's lives and make life more dangerous and unfair for so many people. So we will see what happens, and I'll try to keep folks updated. And feel free to reach out with thoughts or questions about the 303 creative case and what comes next. And last recommendation, which I've made before, is the Boom Lawyered podcast. I highly recommend the Boom Lawyered podcast. They've been doing lots of Supreme Court coverage, and it's done by a legal journalism team that focuses exclusively on this, and it's their job. So they do really in-depth work on these cases. All right. That's enough for today. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.